And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not to men. Colossians 3:23. There's a reason he doesn't cover the rest of Colossians in any of this, because this part of Colossians, which is a Pauline epistle, is this, like, literally Colossians 3, I think 21 through 24, is directly spoken to slaves. The idea being, I think right before this is where it's like, look, just obey your masters. Don't kick up a fuss. Be a good slave. Then, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Now, he does say, and by he, I mean Paul, maybe whoever wrote Colossians. I think it's generally agreed this wasn't actually one of Paul's specific letters. It was written while he was in prison, yada, yada, yada. I believe right after this is when he's like, and to you slave owners, make sure you treat your slaves good, all right? Do that. So I can see why Mike, like, just sort of pared away the beginning and end of this. It's just like, yeah, whatever you do, do it heartily. We'll just leave out the fact that he's talking to slaves. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we're discussing a very strange book that's about a very strange couple of books that uses two weird books, really weird choices from the Bible to make a point that I'm not really sure what the point is, but it's not the point of the story they use in this book. That's right, this week's book is 2001's The Berenstain Bears on Time. Also, very strange book, because this one has a subtitle. This is a Living Lights book, a faith story. It's one of your 8x8s, just a general book. But it's just called, officially called, The Berenstain Bears, Bears on Time. And then underneath Bears on Time, Solving the Lateness Problem, exclamation point. I don't think we've ever had, at least not in this format, a Berenstain Bears book with a subtitle. Like, we've got a, I want to clarify what the point of this book is. What the aim of this book is to solve the lateness problem. Do they solve the late? Is that really what this book is about? How do they figure it out with a Bible story? What relevance does the quote Papa throws out halfway through the book have to do with anything? Could this whole book be summarized in the last couple of pages? Yes, yes, I don't know. Maybe. Let's find out. This is the Berenstain Bears, Bears on Time, 2001 by Mike Berenstain. What is this book about? Let's find out, because we got a lot to cover. So we already talked about the opening quote, which is from It's from Colossians, Pauline epistle, doesn't have anything to do with anything, certainly isn't addressing being on time for stuff. This book isn't about doing work heartily. I mean, it does say that they enjoy what they do, but they're also not, as far as I know, slaves of any sort. Maybe Mike's leading up to some huge revelation, like they're some sort of like intergalactic slave race to, like, I don't know, their overlords. Not really sure what point we're trying to make, but I know that at the end of the day, Mike had to open this book with a quote, and so that's the one he chose. So we're looking at the Bear family. Now, this is a Living Lights book. It's a Zonderkids book. It's a faith story, which means it is delightfully, gorgeously, beautifully illustrated, beautifully colored. I love the way Mike uses color. I assume this is some sort of watercolor in the background to express texture, to show time of day, time of year. It seems to be a book set in the early fall. There are some fallen leaves, some crunchy leaves on the ground. We have a lot of browns. We have a lot of auburns and golds in the Bear family treehouse. It's not pure green. The leaves are starting to change. I really like the way this book looks. In fact, I really like this book, and you'll find out why. But I'll let you know right now, it's because this book is confusing and makes no sense. And that's probably the best. I love theater, and I love plays, and I love musicals, more or less. And some of my favorite plays and musicals are problem ones. Ones that don't quite work, where you, as a director, as a producer, as a cast, you have to really figure out how to make this story work, because on the page just doesn't It just doesn't come together. This is one of those books. And those are, of course, some of the more interesting to talk about. So what's this book? So it starts off, the Bear family, who live down a sunny dirt road, and here it is, deep in bear country. I love it. It talks about how happy they are. They're a busy, happy family. They like to work hard. They like to play hard. They do a lot of chores. They have a lot of fun. But sometimes it seems that there is more. The more they did, the more there is to do. You may be thinking to yourself, have we not covered this subject before? Yes. Way back in the Berenstain Bears, Too Much Pressure? The Trouble with Pressure is the one where they've overdone it. They have way too much on their plate. They're trying to do too many things in the day, and they have to come up with a plan. They have to come up with a schedule. They have to cut a few things out of their lives to make things work. So they're not so much under pressure. Now, you may also be wondering, Bears on Time, haven't we covered time before? Yes. We've talked about this with the book The Berenstain Bears on Time, and the thing that, rewritten as The Berenstain Bears Catch the Bus, which was that a religious one? I don't remember. But Bears on Time was about being late for things and having to manage your time. So how are they going to fit these concepts together? The idea of being overworked, overscheduled, and also the idea of being on time for things. How is that going to solve the lateness problem? What does it have to do with the Holy Bible? I don't know. But I do know that the illustrations in this book, the expressions in the bears' faces, Papa jogging, Mama hauling groceries, brother raking leaves, sister playing soccer, honey pulling their dog around in a wagon. Some great facial expressions, some very expressive bears. Really love it. Because the Cubs have to go to school. They have soccer practice. They have gymnastics, which I didn't know was still a thing. They have apparently brother's taking the violin or the viola. I don't understand. I don't know when this happened, but he's been taking violin. Sister's been taking ballet again. That's awesome. But then they have to do their homework. So in addition to all this school stuff, after school stuff, they have homework, but they also needed to take breaks. They like to watch TV, play video games, hang out outside. And Mama and Papa have a similar story. Papa has, he's a carpenter. He's a furniture maker. He works by hand. He doesn't use a lot of technology. So his projects take a lot more time. Mama does a lot of the housework. She cleans up. She has to beat the rugs. They all go to the grocery store, the hardware store, the post office, the dry cleaners, to the bank. They do all this stuff together. We get this great sort of spread of Bear Town, and I love it when Mike takes the time to show Bear Town in the more agrarian style, that the more rustic style than we've seen later on in the books, where it looks just more like a modern sort of Richard Scarry-esque busy town. This is like a very the streets are closed, they're much closer together, the buildings are all close together, everything's made out of a tree, the signs are all wood, the ground is not paved, it looks like a dirt road, the car is like a little more old-fashioned. This is the style of Bear Town that we love to see. We love to see it. But also in the foreground of the image of Bear Town is a bear in a bowler hat or a derby that just looks done with life. Just looks absolutely finished. Does not have time in his life for anything else. He's wearing a blazer with a turtleneck. Just this. I don't know who this bear is supposed to be, but he's done. He's finished. He's through with it. No more for this poor man. I don't understand why he's the center of our image, this tired bear, but same, my friend. Hashtag same. We also get a little bit of Billy from Family Circus going on here, because we see the bear family going into the post office, but we also see a dotted line illustrating all the places they've been. The bank, the cleaners, hardware store, grocery store, dentist, and the doctor. Busy afternoon. I don't know why they ran into the doctor. I don't know why and how they went to the doctor, then to the dentist, then to the grocery store, then to the hardware store, then to the cleaners, then to the bank. Also, I don't know how the grocery store is just crammed between the much larger hardware store and the much larger dentist in this town. Mike, please explain it to me. I don't get it, but it works. It's great. But they also like to relax. So Papa likes to go bowling, which is also, again, something we haven't really heard a lot about. Is he on a league? Is he on a team? When does Papa go bowling? Also, the bowling alley, which we know for a fact is where, in one timeline, Grizzly Gramps met Grizzly Gran, because Gramps worked at the bowling alley. This bowling alley is super rustic. The lanes, the ball returner, it's all made out of wood. It's like knotty, piney wood. The chute the balls come out of is made of bark. It's a hollowed out log. This is a bear town we haven't seen in a while, and I'm here for it. And Mama enjoys a quick trip to the beauty parlor. Again, something I've never seen Mama do in any of the books. And she's having her hair did underneath one of those hair, hair dryers. But this thing is lime green, and it is from the 60s. We're in a weird, this is Living Lights fully going back to the 70s for the Bears, at least the late 60s, early 70s for the Bears. Mike is super indulging in old-time Bear Town, and I'm not angry. I'm not angry about it. I'm certainly not angry. I mean, we do see the Cubs playing handheld, like, video games. So it's not completely rustic. We're not completely falling into a time warp here, but we're playing around with timelines. So the Bear family is overscheduled. There's so many things to do that they don't have time for everything they want to do. And that doesn't, and here's a good point. Here's something that I really like. They are so scheduled. They are scheduled to the minute that any delays, any problems, any hiccups in their plans causes everything to domino and causes them to be late for things. So if the Cubs sleep in, or if they take too long in the bathrooms, or they dawdle over their breakfast, then they're going to be late for school. If Papa loses track of time while he's working, then he'll be late picking up the kids from their after-school activities. If Mama gets too much into enjoying sewing a quilt, she might not get to the grocery store, which means that she won't have the things that she needs to make dinner for the dinner that night, and so dinner will be kind of scanty, or it says, then there wouldn't be much for dinner. So this is the lateness problem we're kind of talking about, I guess. Is it really about lateness or scheduling? I don't know, but Papa starts thinking, and of course, knowing our Papa Bear, he starts thinking biblically. In fact, he thinks about Ecclesiastes 3:1. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. And he's like, maybe we need to find the right time for everything, for every activity under heaven. Which is weird, because I said this book was about this book is a weird book, and it's about two weird books. So bringing up Ecclesiastes, this is the beginning, of course, the for everything there is a season, turn part of the Bible. Ecclesiastes is a weird book. It is one of the Ketuvim, the writings in the Tanakh, the Hebrew collection of biblical books. It's divided into three sections: the Torah, which is the like instructional books; the Nevi'im, which is the books of the prophets. There's a ton of those, and the Ketuvim, which is the writings. And those include like the Psalms, Proverbs, the Book of Job, the Five Megillot, the scrolls like Song of Songs, Book of Ruth, Lamentations, this, Ecclesiastes and Esther, and the historical books: Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Chronicles. Ecclesiastes is a weird book. In fact, scholars aren't quite sure why it was included in the Bible, because even though it ends with the classic saying, fear God and keep his commandments, and that sort of justifies for a lot of people why it's in the Bible, because it ends with that. They're like, okay, fear God and keep his commandments, for that is the duty of all of mankind, since every deed will God bring to judgment for every hidden act, be it good or evil. None of the rest of Ecclesiastes is really about that. So Ecclesiastes is the life of Kohelet, which is based on the word kahal, which means assembly. It's called Ecclesiastes because of the Greek word for assembly is ecclesia, and so Ecclesiastes is essentially a transliteration of a translation, is a Greek transliteration, or is a transliteration of the Greek translation of the Hebrew term Kohelet. So they turn into Ecclesiastes, but it's about this guy Kohelet. But what's interesting about Ecclesiastes, it's a super pessimistic book, and the whole like, for everything there is a season, a time to live, time to die, time to dance, time to not dance, whatever. Even though as inspirational as that phrase is, tends to be used in popular culture, it's really not in the book of Ecclesiastes. The point that the author, the character of Ecclesiastes is trying to make is essentially, look, everything's going to happen. Everything's going to happen. It doesn't matter what you do, because everything's going to happen. Everything's going to happen. God's going to do what he does. You just do what you do. There's a time for everything. Like, everyone's born, everyone dies. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And that's why the book is so, it's a pessimistic book. Vanity, vanity, all is vanities. And people are like, why is this included? It doesn't really have anything to do. And even though it ends with the whole, like, keep his commandments, they're like, none of the rest of the book is about that. It's not about God. It's mostly about just, like, how futile life is, like, on earth, because just kind of meaningless. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone does, because at the end of the day, you work hard and then you die. So you may as well have a good time, I guess, but don't have too good a time. Keep the commandments, but just, it's weird. It's a weird book. Ecclesiastes is a weird book, but I love it. And I love talking about it and looking through it and reading it. It's weird. But it's also weird that Papa's like, I mean, I think it's indicative that Papa doesn't really know much about the quotes he's picking, because that's not what Ecclesiastes is saying. Ecclesiastes isn't saying, there's a time for everything, so get your scheduler out and make sure you have time for everything. That's not it. In fact, Ecclesiastes is saying, look, everything's going to happen, so don't worry about it. Like, if anything, Papa should be like, you know what? Ecclesiastes says that there's a time for everything and a season for everything, so it'll all work out, I guess. Like, that's literally not literally, but that's more in line with what Ecclesiastes is saying at that point than what Papa thinks they're saying, which is haul out your calendar and figure out when you're going to go to soccer practice. But we do have some great illustrations. First of all, we have a great picture of Papa using the shaver, the wood shaver thing that you shave across the top of the wood to make the little wood curls. Because we get to see Papa with his sleeves rolled up, his guns a-blazing, working his buns off while suddenly remembering he forgot to pick his kids up from school. It's a great illustration of Papa. We love to see him. We love to see him with his arms out. He's good looking. He's a good looking man. He's also like saying the thing about the seasons. We get to see a nice Mike illustration of the bear house, the bear's treehouse, from one season to the next. And on first glance, you might not realize this, but Mike has done this amazing thing where he's drawn the treehouse in spring, summer, fall, and winter. But each time he's drawn each. It's not just the same static shot of the treehouse. It does a complete 360. So in spring, it's in one position. Then in summer, it's turned. Then in fall, it's turned again. And then in winter, it's a little further back. He just does a really good job of showing the treehouse 360 degrees. Like, in case you're wondering what the treehouse looks like from all angles, this is what it looks like from all angles. It looks great. Kudos, Mike. So Papa decides to read the Cubs a Bible story. And he's like, what do you want to hear? And again, we get the Cubs completely misunderstanding what these stories are about because they're little kids. Honey wants to hear the story of Noah because she likes all the animals. And of course, it's Noah's about everyone in the world dying. It's about everyone in the world dying, including all of the animals, except for the few that are on the boat. Brother's like, story of David. I like it when he fights Goliath, the giant. And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't really fight Goliath, the giant. He just stands there and then he kills him. And he knocks him down. He knocks him down with a rock, and then he cuts his head off. Like that's. We don't even know if Goliath was really dead at that point. Like, Goliath was knocked down, but then David runs up and he cuts his head off with a sword, which is kind of like, all right, good on you. But that's, you know. And then sister's like, I like the story of Daniel. I like it when he escapes danger in the lion's den. And again, he doesn't really escape danger. It's the whole like faith in the Lord and the lions don't kill him. And then the king is like, oh my God, this guy, he knows what's going on. A little misinterpreted. I guess the girls like animals. The boy likes killing. He likes killing. Papa's like, I got a better story for you. This is a story that has an animal in it, big giant animal. It's about an escape from danger. And it teaches us a lesson about not putting off until tomorrow what you can do today. And he whips out their book of Bible stories. It's actually the Berenstain Bears book of Bible stories, which is very funny. And he completely tells only part of the story he's about to read and misinterprets what's there. I don't know if it's Papa's fault or the book of Bible stories that he whips out, but he is telling the story of Jonah the bear or Jonah the prophet. Now, the story as in this book isn't quite what the story of Jonah is about. It does say that there's a man lived in the holy city, holy land long ago. God chose him to preach his word in a faraway place, but Jonah didn't want to preach in a faraway place. It's really what happens. God says, I want you to go to Nineveh and tell them to worship me because they're in a lot of trouble if they don't. If they don't worship me, then in 40 days, they're doomed. And Jonah's like, I don't want to do that. I want to do that. They're not going to listen anyway. And so Jonah like doesn't. And so this story, this version of the Jonah story frames it as he puts off doing the work, excuse after excuse, delay and delay. But that's not what happens. And in the book of Jonah, he's like, I don't want to do this. And he just runs away, hops on a boat to get me out of here. So they go out on the boat, but then a storm sets up. And it says, in the Berenstain Bears version, it says, so God sent a great storm to keep the ship from sailing far away. Which is true. But in the book of Jonah, what happens is the sailors each pray to their own individual God. And they're like, please help us, but it doesn't work. So then they're like, well, it's clearly the fault of somebody on the ship that this is happening. So they draw lots, they find out that it's Jonah's fault, which is weird. It's like a weird little divination thing, and it works. And so they're like, what's going on? And Jonah's like, well, remember how I told you that I'm running away from God? Well, I'm a prophet, it's kind of my fault this is happening. Here's how you fix it. Throw me into the sea and the waters will calm. And the sailors are like, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. So then they think about it. Things get worse. Finally, the captain is like, let's pray to Jonah's God. Let's pray to this God of the Hebrews, and see what happens. So they pray and they're like, look, God, if we throw this guy overboard, will you please just not blame us? Will you please just make it cool for us? Because he asked us to. Can you make it so that us killing one of your prophets doesn't condemn us like it would be if we just murdered somebody? And then they pick him up and they throw him over. So bear in mind that Jonah was like, you got to throw me overboard. This is my fault. And they're like, eh. And then finally they're like, all right. But they do ask God. They're like, is this cool? We want to make sure this is cool. They throw him overboard and they're like, it worked. Wow. I guess we should worship Jonah's God then. Now in the Berenstain Bears book, they just throw him overboard. It just says they decided to get rid of Jonah. They threw him overboard and he sank beneath the waves, which really puts a lot of the fault, does exactly the opposite of what the actual book of Jonah does. Like it puts the fault on the sailors. It's like, he's got to just throw him overboard. No, in the book, Jonah tells them, they know it's a whole process, right? So then in the Berenstain Bears book, it says that God took mercy on Jonah and sent a whale to swallow him up and keep him from drowning, which, again, isn't really what happens in the book. In the book of Jonah, God does send a great fish to swallow him, but it's not explicitly stated to keep him from drowning. It's just he gets swallowed by this great fish that God sends. It, most likely just to give him some time to think, to just be like, all right, it's not to, like, I'm saving your life. It's more like, just sit in this belly of this fish for a while and figure it out. So Jonah prays, which is what happens in the book of Jonah. In my distress, I called to the Lord and he answered me, which is true. That's what happens. God ordered the whale to spit Jonah out on dry land. It says God makes the fish vomit up Jonah. Now in this book, it says, now Jonah realized the error of his ways. He saw that God wanted him to do the right thing. Jonah finally went to that faraway city, Nineveh, to preach the word of God. And that's how it ends, which is not, A, how the book of Jonah ends, B, the point of the book of Jonah. Jonah does go to Nineveh, and what he does is, it's a huge city. He works his way through the city, starts preaching like near the walls and work his way inward. And he's like, I'm a prophet from the Lord. You got to repent. If you don't repent and pray to God, he's going to destroy the city in 40 days. And what happens is, unlike what he thought was going to happen, is everyone's like, all right, let's tear our shirts. Let's put on sackcloth. Let's put dust on our heads and pray to God. And then the king hears about it. He's like, what's going on there? And they're like, this guy Jonah showed up. He's a prophet. He says that God's going to destroy the city in 40 days if we don't repent. So the king is like, great. Takes off his robes, puts on sackcloth, issues a decree. It's like every single person in the city's got to put on sackcloth, put dirt on their heads. Strike that. Every person and every single animal, all the farm animals, you got to put sackcloth on your cows, make them pray to God, put dirt on their heads. So then Jonah's like, what's happening? And he leaves the town. He goes and he sits. He's like, this is stupid. This isn't going to work. And he waits for God to destroy the city. But God doesn't destroy the city. And Jonah is ticked. He's ticked off. And he says to God, he's like, so you were just going to do this anyway, right? Like this, what, you just wasted my life. You wasted my time. You made me get swallowed by a fish. What is this? They did what you asked and then you did what you said. And you had no intention of destroying this city. I'm pretty ticked off. Strike me dead right now. And God's like, just chill out. And it's really hot out here. You have shelter. Look, I'm going to grow this plant, give you some shade. And Jonah's like, fine. But he wakes up the next day and God has sent a worm to kill the plant. And Jonah's like, you killed the plant. You didn't kill the people. You may as well kill me. And God's like, why are you so upset about this plant? You didn't have anything to do with this plant. I grew the plant. I made it die. But you're really upset about this plant. And now look at out of the town of Nineveh. There's like 100,000 people down there. 100,000 people and their animals. And then the book just ends. Like, that's literally how it ends. Like, it just ends, like, in the middle of, like, God's thought. He says, where is it? I have it right here. No, that's Colossians. He says, but the Lord said, you've been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and it died overnight. And should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals? And that's it. That's how it ends. It ends on this, like, huh? You angry about a plant? And I'm not supposed to be upset about some people? And that's how it ends. Now, one thing the story is not about is about being late for something. It's not about being late. It's not about time management. It's not about overscheduling. Jonah's not late for anything. He just runs away from his job. So Jonah is one of the minor books of prophets. There's a lot of books of prophets. Like a lot, a lot. Like a lot, a lot, a lot. And there are 12 minor prophets. So the books of prophets, the Nevi'im, are Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings. Those are the former. Then there's the latter books of prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. The minor books of prophets, there's Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Those are the minor books of prophets. And they're called the minor books of prophets because they're very short. And in fact, these aren't separate really separate books in the Nevi'im. It's the Book of Minor Prophets. 12 stories. They're very short. You can read Jonah. The story of Jonah takes like 5 minutes to read. It's a very short book. It is essentially a summary of what happens. Except for Jonah, the longest, like the long, there's a long prayer. Like a third of it is Jonah's prayer in the belly of the fish. And what's funny about this book, though, is no one's ever been able to agree what it's about, like, at all. Like, there are so many, like, different interpretations that it's just one of the strangest. It's one of the strangest books of the Bible because it ends abruptly. There's this whole thing about the worm in the bush. There's this whole thing about, like, is Jonah a good prophet? Is Jonah a bad prophet? Like, why was he probably what was God's intention in the first place? The reason I find it very funny is because one of the more, as when I say, and when I say modern, I mean like starting in the 19th century, interpretations of the Book of Jonah. And one thing it actually has a lot of scholarship to back it up is that Jonah was weirdly included in the books of prophets, because Jonah might have been written as a joke, as literally as a joke, like a hilarious satire, as a parody of prophetic literature. There is a lot of scholarship to indicate that you're supposed to find the Book of Jonah very funny, because it is it ironically puts twists on all the tropes of prophetic literature, from the way Jonah reacts to getting it. Like, yes, the reluctant prophet is a thing, but Jonah's like, absolutely not. And then he just leaves. And the fact that he keeps, everything happens to the opposite of what is supposed to happen in prophetic literature. Everyone just listens to Jonah and they are fine. Like, there's none of, usually what happens is a prophet will be like, you got to do this. And people will be like, no. And then they'll get punished. But what happens is Jonah is aware of these tropes. And so he's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to tell these sailors what to do because they're not going to listen to me in the first place, because no one ever listens to the prophet. And then he tells them and they're like, great, we'll pray to your God and everything will be fine. And he's like, no, that doesn't work. And they're like, no, actually, we're going to try it and it does work. And he's like, well, what the heck? And then he goes to Nineveh, and it's supposed to be a difficult job of him preaching. He's supposed to be like, okay, buck up, Jonah, because no one's going to listen. And they immediately listen. Like, that's not supposed to happen in prophetic literature. It's his job is supposed to be hard. And they listen, they do what he says. He throws up his hands and leaves. He's like, this is stupid. Clearly he's going to actually destroy the city. That's what's going to happen. There's no way this is going to work. And then it works. And then he gets angry. He gets so angry that he just like, just kill me now. Like, I don't understand what story I'm in. So there's a strong argument that the Book of Jonah is meant to be a funny book, like a book of, you know, at least initially, like the original Book of Jonah was written as like a tongue-in-cheek satire on the prophets. And it can be read that way. What I'm saying is this is certainly not a book about being late for soccer practice. It's certainly not a book about forgetting to pick your kids up after school. That's not what Jonah is about. It's not about that at all. I know that Mike has to find, he's trying to make a point here. He's trying to sell books to religious kids, to religious parents. And it's a fun book to illustrate. The image of Jonah being swallowed by the whale underwater is one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen in a Berenstain Bears book. It's a delight. It's hilarious. He's drawn a great whale. This giant, probably the best interpretation of the whale of a whale swallowing a man since the one in Pinocchio, Monstro. And so brother's like, well, I guess putting things off until tomorrow isn't such a great idea. And so sister's like, so if we delay and put things off and are on time, are we going to get swallowed by a whale? And Papa's like, no, I don't think that's not. And it is fair. A question, because this doesn't make any sense. And Mama's like, look, being late for soccer practice or being late for school isn't like as serious as Jonah not listening to God's demands to be a prophet, which is true. Sister's like, okay. And then Papa's like, but what I'm saying is we have a lateness problem. And I've been thinking about it. I have a plan for it. This is that parent thing where like you're trying to make a point, but you're not making it well. And you're not making your point well. It doesn't make any sense. So you're just like, ugh. But I want to point out this image. Mike has drawn Papa in a classic Papa pose. And when I say classic Papa pose, I mean like classic, like 1960s Berenstain Bears, where he has his, he's pointing, he has his wrist cocked back, His eyes are closed. He's making a proclamation. He's got his pointy Berenstain Bears finger. It's a very Stan and Jan illustration of his hand, and I love it. But he's making this point. He's got the book in his lap. He's got Brother and Honey sitting in his lap, and he's actually squishing them together. And Mike has gone the extra mile and has drawn Brother and Honey being squished together. Brother has a concerned look on his face. His shoulders are up at his ears. He's looking up at Papa like, I'm being squished. Honey is being squished. Mike didn't have to do this. It's an adorable image, and mwah, 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 chef's kiss. I love it. This is a very delightfully illustrated book. The last page in the book is a giant chart Papa's made called Bears on Time. Hangs it in the kitchen, marks off all the times for everything that had to be done that day. It's very pretty, has lots of different colors. By following the schedule, the bear family solves their lateness problem. Now the bears are able to go right on with their busy ways, and they're happy about that. So unlike Too Much Pressure, they don't even cut out any of their activities. Listen to this. Sunday, 8 o'clock, get up, 9 o'clock, breakfast, 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, church, 12 o'clock, family lunch, 1 o'clock through 4 o'clock is playtime, then homework, then Bible study, then I guess supper, bedtime is later, all right? But we can't see, I guess like bedtime is like 9. Monday, 7 o'clock, rise and shine, 8 o'clock, school, 9 o'clock, work, 10 o'clock, quilting, 12 o'clock, lunch, 1 o'clock, shopping, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, school pickup, soccer practice, end of work, playtime, homework, dinner, screen time, bedtime. Tuesdays, we got basically the same thing. Quilting's an hour later. 2 o'clock is errands. Got school pickup, gymnastics, work, dinner, homework. More quilting on Wednesday. We've got shopping again. Wednesdays also a return to soccer practice. Thursdays when we have music lessons, errands. Friday, ballet. And then on Saturday, we got rise and shine. We got screen time, playtime, shopping, lunch, soccer, 2 soccer games. So 2 hours of soccer games. That can't be every Saturday. We got playtime / bowling. We got playtime / beauty parlor, homework, dinner, screen time, bedtime. Looking at this list, I would say the Cubs have too much homework. That's just me. Homework hassle, trouble with homework. The homework problem, I'd say it's right there in front of you. Too much homework. This was the Berenstain Bears, Bears on Time, Solving the Lateness Problem. The only book in the series that has a subtitle. What did I think of Bears on Time? I love it. I love it. I love it. It got me to reread the Book of Jonah. It got me to read Ecclesiastes again for the first time in forever. It got me to look at the Pauline epistles again, which I love. It's a problematic book. It's a troubling book. It doesn't make any sense. Has nothing to do with Jonah. Has nothing to do with being a prophet. I mean, look at it. It's a book about time that spends most of its runtime talking about one of the biblical prophets. That has nothing to do with time. It doesn't have anything to do with time. However, it's a wonderful book. I really like this book. I think Mike goes out of his way to draw some great bears in it. He got some great expressions. Get back to that rustic woody look. It's like this guy, Mike, sat down to illustrate this book and he was like, I've got a list of things I want to draw and they are all bark and knot holes. And that is what I'm doing. Like he really was just like, I'm drawing wood. I'm drawing bark. I'm drawing knotty pine. I'm drawing hardwood. I'm going to draw Papa with his sleeves rolled up. For those of you out there who have been wanting to see that, I'm going to draw the Cubs getting squished. I'm going to draw Jonah drowning. I get to draw a giant whale. I get to draw people making faces, people being pressured, going to have a good time. And we did. We had a great time. That's the Berenstain Bears, Bears on Time. Go check it out. You can get it digitally. You can get it physically. It's a Living Lights book. It's fun. I don't think it's too preachy. It's got that weird thing with Colossians in the beginning, which we don't really need to talk about anymore. It's Bears on Time. It's got a subtitle. It's got a subtitle. Look at it. It's got a subtitle. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of this big, bold experiment. Closing in on 10 years this spring. What are you going to do to celebrate 10 years of Deep in Bear Country? I know what I'm going to do. Take a nap. Listen to my other show. It's called It's Del Toro Time. It's also called The Ecstasy of Influence. It's like a subheading. We have a subtitle. The Ecstasy of Influence. We just covered some movie, but our next movie is going to be the classic Prince of Egypt. So if you got kiddies, pop on Prince of Egypt, watch that with them. Then listen to us talk about it on It's Del Toro Time. Prince of Egypt. Because there's a lot less family-friendly ones coming up after that. So Prince of Egypt, check it out. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country.